Some of you know, because you were in the Wednesday night series that I just completed recently, that I've really had a preoccupation with the subject of courage and kind of how courage works and what goes on in the real heart of courage. It's been said in a lot of different ways that courage isn't feeling no fear, it's being afraid and moving forward anyway. Different ways to say that, but that's just the reality of courage. The Christmas story is a story of courage all the way through. Courage of facing threats, the courage of facing embarrassment, the courage of facing raw fear and uncertainty. The Christmas story is all of that. Especially Mary's courage has always been amazing to me. The angel speaks to her, and she becomes pregnant by God. Now, everybody's going to believe that story, right? And then she travels about 100 miles to stay with Elizabeth for 3 months. And then in a very pregnant place, her baby bump is really showing now, she goes back home. She goes back and she beards the lion and the reality of her own community as a very pregnant. Do you know what the Old Testament sentence was for a woman who was engaged and was with another man? Stoning. That's what she faced. That's what she faced. You think this kid didn't have some pluck? Teenager, traveling 100 miles all by herself, and 30 years later, about 30 years later, it is still being rumored and gossiped that Jesus was conceived in fornication. Did you ever notice this in John, book of John, chapter 8? It says, Jesus said, "You do the deeds of your father." Then they said to him, "We were not born in fornication. We were not born in fornication like you." Still rumored that he was conceived in fornication. Christmas story from Gabriel's message all the way to the cross is a story of undaunted courage in one decision after another. We can only walk into the dark and turn on the light when we know we have a with us Savior, Emmanuel. I think there's a misunderstanding still with some that if God gives us direction, if we're obedient to His direction, if we follow God's way, if we keep our eyes on Jesus, everything's going to go smoothly. Everything's just going to go very smoothly. You know what the truth is? Go through Hebrews 11, the heroes of the faith. Mystery and uncertainty and challenge is a part of the faith walk by design. It's just part of it. Our world wants to live looking for a lucky break. I'm going to have a lucky break. I might win the lottery. You know, the ads say somebody's going to win and it might as well be you. So go and buy another ticket. You might win the lottery. We might get a $100,000 plus job playing on our computer in our PJs. But the courage of the Christmas story isn't like that at all. It is determined perseverance. It is It is looking the enemy in the eye. It's doing hard things. Not easy things. It's doing hard things. And it's always a mixture of faith along with a clear assessment of reality. It's kind of like the old Arkansas lady that said, "I believe in God and Vicks." You know? I read recently, actually it was from Brian Houston, head of Hillsong, that female lions almost always do the hunting for the pride. They are the hunters. The big guys with the loud roar and the dramatic persona look impressive, but it's the chicks that you got to watch out for. You know? It's just that way, Royce. Sorry. But I also read that the males have been observed playing a small role in the hunt. I didn't know this before. While the females have been observed stalking from behind and the antelopes begin to move in a particular direction, the males are positioned out in front of the herd. So they learned how to do this so that the females are back here. They're the ones after the prey. The males are out front. And apparently the roar of the male is so powerful. I didn't know this till I prepared this message. It can be heard as much as 5 miles away. That's pretty scary. That's pretty scary stuff. So the male goes out ahead and the males roar, this terrible roar, out in front of the herd. And so the antelope, in his little brain, he says, "I don't want to go in that direction." So he turns around and he goes back. Guess what he goes back into? The females that are lying in the grass waiting. So he turns right back into the trap where the females are waiting, because he reacts in panic and he reacts emotionally to what's going on. And the roar is so intimidating, he flees from it and flees right into the trap. So following their emotion, following their instinct, causes these little antelopes to make the last mistake in their little lives when they turn around. It's counterintuitive. But the right choice would be to run into the dark, to be run into the roar. That would be the right choice. That's Christmas courage. That's Christmas courage. And it's the only way we build muscles in our soul. Do you know one of the greatest ways that we harm the elderly, the disabled, the bereaved, people in a time of great loss? We treat them as if they are a lost cause. We treat them as some less than human, in some less than human way. We tell them what they can't do. "Oh, don't pick that up. I'll pick that up for you. You're still grieving. You should just stay home and relax." Professionals call that something. It's called pre-death dying. Pre-death dying. It's taking life and motivation from the weak, from the elderly, and treating them as an incomplete human being. Oh, I'll do that for you. You just need to sit over there and just realize. Do you know that in my experience in these last few months, the worst times are when I'm sitting at home trying to relax? Mm-hmm. I got, I don't know how many, I would guess 6 notes from a person, another state. You don't know this individual. He's actually a dear friend. I've traveled with this guy. And he really cares for me, but he wrote me probably 6 times, very, very involved notes. And they were notes that said things like, I can't imagine how much agony you're in. It must be awful. And I read the follow-up words, to be you. It must be awful to be you. Don't try to do what's hard. You need to just let other people carry the burden. I got to where I dreaded, when I saw the notes in my mail, I dreaded to see them come. Because he kept telling me how awful my life was and what I can't do. And it was depressing to me. So finally, I just sat down and I wrote a fairly lengthy letter of a positive report of how I'm running to the roar. I'm doing what I can. I'm doing things I've never done before. And God is helping me. And guess what happened? There was not one more note. Not one more note came. Because I wasn't beggarly, and I didn't try to suck up his pity. Boy, but I'll tell you, that's milquetoast to say and rocket science to do. But if you don't do it, your soul doesn't build up the muscles necessary. The medical profession has learned that pre-death dying leads to one result. You know what that is? Death. Death. Diminished health, at least. Anyone who's had serious surgery, Kathy, anyone who's had serious surgery knows how hard it is that first day. I mean, you feel like you've just been hit by a truck, and the nurses come in and say, okay, we want to get you up now. Get me up? You know, I had lunch with Dr. Westbrook not long ago, and his wife had knee replacement, and he said, first day they stood her up, and he said, that little lady stood there and said, I can't do this. Man, I'm telling you, it's tough. That's really tough love. It's hard to get up. Then that second day, not only do they want you to walk around a little bit, but you got to go to the bathroom by yourself too. Oh, by the way, better figure out how to do this. You still feel like you've been hit by a truck. It all hurts, and there's a tendency to say, I can't do that. I just can't do it. But medical professionals have learned that it's best not to do everything for us. Has almost everybody here watched Finding Nemo? Okay? You know the movie Finding Nemo? Yeah, it's actually one of my favorites. You remember Dory? Directionless, crazy, doesn't know the direction, doesn't know what she's doing. She never knows anything. But her main advice to Nemo when she stammers around and can't figure out what to do, she said, just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. Remember that? Sometimes that is the best advice we have. Just keep swimming. It's crazy Dory advice, but it's just what you got to do. It's always seemed odd to me. I've taught and read so many times 1 Samuel chapter 17, David's confrontation with Goliath. It's pretty hard to figure out that portion of 1 Samuel to determine when that actually happened. We're not real sure, and even those who really study it can't be sure, because a lot of times in those, especially in those Old Testament books, they were not recorded chronologically in order. So something might be recorded over here that actually happened back there and things like that. So David faced the giant. I would have thought, if it'd been me, that the thing I would have been doing would have been sneaking around the rocks, looking to see how I could get the right angle so I would have the best possibility at a shot. And I would have considered that to be God's will, because he does use our brain too. But listen to what it says about David. It says, "So it was, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried. Is this guy crazy? Is he on some kind of suicide mission? David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine." Now people say, "Oh, he was just filled with so much, you know, he didn't even care anymore. He was just going for it." He ran toward this terrorist. He ran toward the thing that really seemed like certain death. It really did. And I am absolutely sure that his heart was pounding. I am absolutely sure that his adrenaline was pumping in his body. But you know what? There was only one way to life, and it was through Goliath. There's only one way for the dry bones of Israel to rise up, and it was through Goliath. Something that's always been interesting in the story to me also is the fact that it never says God spoke to him and said, "You can face the giant." It never says there was a prophet that said to him, "You can go out there and face that giant. You're going to be okay." Nothing like that is included in the entire account. And he didn't have to do this very hard thing. No one required it of him. He was just a young guy. In fact, other people tried to give him a door out, and they said, "Just chill out. Calm down. We got this. You know, this is not your job. Let us take care of this heavy lifting here." But his courage came from a deep place within the deep of his soul, and he was operating in the principles he had learned in life. He was operating in the principles he had learned in life. He didn't have a direct word. He didn't have a specific word. He just knew this is how life works, and this is what has to be done. Family, there are times when we have nothing. No word from God, no voice from heaven, no special prophecy. I mean, it's always nice when you have those kinds of things and you open your Bible and you put your finger down and there's the perfect verse, you know. But as Dory said, sometimes we just have to keep swimming, because swim was the last thing God said to do. Just keep swimming. So David said, "Look, here's the reason. I killed a lion and killed a bear. Now, I'm just putting two and two together here, but this giant might be the next thing in the list, and I kind of feel that." You know, he had kind of like what Jerry Cook calls a holy hunch. It's like, I believe it. I think so. Nobody affirmed it. And he ran toward the roar. It's a lot like Jonathan when he said to his armor bearer, "You know what? These Philistines have pushed us around so long. Oh, they've pushed us around so long, and we don't even have weapons. So I tell you what, let's just climb up this steep place. Have you ever seen, I don't know how, I haven't been to Israel, but I looked at a picture of that place and where they think he actually climbed up. That was a tough climb. That was a tough climb. And he said this to his armor bearer. He said, let's climb up there and face these Philistines. I think there was about 20 of them, weren't there? I didn't really plan to say this, but I think there's about 20 of them. He said, let's just face them. And he said, you know, it might be, I love that. Don't you know that armor bearer kind of went, when he said that, he said, it might be that God will give us a victory. Let's see what happens. No way. That's crazy. He just ran to the roar. Shammah stood in a bean field. He was one of the heroes. David's mighty man stood in a bean field. And he said, I'm tired of being pushed around. Beans are not worth much, but they're my beans. And I'm going to stand here and face the Philistines. You know, we just reach a point in life where we say, I may as well just run toward the roar. As Tori said, just keep swimming. I have to be careful in how I say this, but some people felt that I should play down Christmas a little. You know, just kind of take it easy at Christmas time. I mean, you know, don't try to do the stuff in your home. Don't try to have hospitality. Don't try to do any of that kind of stuff because, you know, my wife was the queen of Christmas. I mean, she was the queen of Christmas. She loved it. So did I. In June, she died in July. In June, she already had gifts put aside for different people. They were marked in bags. They had sticky notes on them. I mean, the woman was, she was a Christmas aficionado. So we have a, we have two trees. We have a 7-foot tree, and we have a 9.5-foot tree. And I said, I'm not going to run. I'm not going to hide from Christmas. I'm not going to hide. I drug Judah over there, and I said, decorate this house. We drug everything out, and I said, I'm going to get the 9.5-foot tree. You know what was interesting to me in preparing this message? 9.5 feet was just about the height of Goliath. So since this week, since I realized that, I've been calling it the Goliath tree. I light that sucker up. The other night I had just a motley crew of friends over, and I'm just wanted to show this to you. This is us. This was the night before Thanksgiving. I had a few friends over. Can you grab that real quick for me, please? Okay. The lights are a little bright up here. It makes it. Yeah, there you go. You can see those people, who they are. Oh, that's our son, by the way, in the foreground there. Some of you don't know who he is because he's not in church very often, but he's a good guy. And this little motley group, that tree there. Now, you can't really tell from this picture, but that's an 11-foot ceiling. And that tree is right up there. You know what I decided to do? I decided to decorate Goliath. Stand him up, put ornaments on him as a trophy of grace. And this week, I've just been laughing to myself. Every time I see that big old tree sticking up there, that's my Goliath tree. I'm going to decorate Goliath. I'm going to make Goliath a praise to God. I'm going to decorate that sucker. Listen, dear ones, God isn't... Thanks, you can turn the lights back up. God isn't scared of what you're scared of. But we don't have to pretend that we're not afraid. That's the thing. We don't have to pretend that we're not afraid. Because naming our fear is part of getting through our fear. Saying what it is as part of getting through it. You know what? I'm going to give you another little personal insight in me, and some of you know this, some of you don't. Every time I go down to Dallas International Street Church, I am facing a part of my past as a little boy growing up on the farm in Oklahoma when the adults around me would say, don't go into that part of town. Don't go into that part of town. Every time I hug those precious black folks and those that are in my life as friends, I thank God that I'm putting another ornament on another Goliath in my life. I actually grew up in a place. I remember Pawnee County Courthouse seeing drinking fountains labeled for whites and for coloreds. I remember that as a little boy. Wow. And every time I go to Dallas International Street Church, I do a little dance around that part of my life. I just do a dance around it. But we have to name it. Listen, you have to name it even if it takes your breath away. And it may feel like it takes your breath away. Do it anyway. He's Emmanuel, God with us. And he's God with us when we are facing the worst and facing the best. When you find yourself trembling as you face your Goliath, whisper to Emmanuel, I know you're with me. I know you're with me. When you speak those words, you are prying joy from the clenched fist of fear. There's an exchange happening there. I've never done this before. I had read in Levi Lusco's book that I've referred to so many times, such a blessing to me in this whole time, that he wrote a manifesto after their little girl, a 5-year-old girl, died. And so I decided to write a Christmas manifesto for myself, but then I decided that I wanted all of us to share it. I wanted all of us to read it, and I'd like to encourage you to read this out loud with me. This is my Christmas manifesto. I'd like for you to read it with me, please. Let's read it out loud together. I will celebrate the birth of the one who came to defeat fear and bring light into every dark place in my life. I will sing as long as I am able. I will celebrate Jesus with all my strength. I will party in the presence of my enemies. I may weep and I may collapse, but I will rise up again and again. I will choose to rejoice in tomorrow so long as he gives me one. And so long as he puts breath in my lungs. Amen. Is that in the printed notes that you have? I think it is. Good. You may need to take that home, and I mean, it's up to you, but you may need to write your own, or you might need to just read that again later to yourself. You know what happens when we run toward the darkness, when we run to the roar? It throws hell all off of track. They don't know what to do with you. It throws hell. The devil doesn't know how to handle somebody that walks into dark places and turns on the light. You're beginning to identify with Job. I turn to Job 13:51 again. It's a familiar verse. And it says, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. But we never really refer to this second part of the verse. It says, even so, I will defend my own ways before him. You know what? I wrote in my Bible, Jean Osborne, because that's the portion of the verse that's my wife. That's her portion. She would do that. You know people that argued with God like Abraham? Wait a minute, Lord, if you'll do this, why won't you do this? Okay, I'll do that. Well, if you'll do that, how about this? That's my wife. She was a bargainer with God. She would press God. I told the Lord after she went to heaven, I said, you got one here. You've never had one like this before. I don't know, Lord. You're just going to have to do the best you can. Yeah. Someone said, most people die at 25, but they don't get buried until they're 85. I'm talking about continuing to live and not dying. When we get hold of Christmas courage, as I'm describing it today, we are running counter to a milquetoast, cowardly world that just says, me first, I need to preserve myself, I'm the important one, I have rights, take care of me. Aren't I wonderful? I deserve aid and comfort. There's this whole spirit of entitlement that Christmas courage comes against all of that. I heard someone say, not here, but someone said, you know, sacrifice is for the young. Us older folks have already paid our dues. We've already paid our dues. It's time for us to just relax and let you younger ones do the hard stuff. Don't ever fall prey to that. Don't ever fall prey to that. That's running toward the chick lions. That's running the wrong direction. And it heads toward death is what it heads toward. You know what, family? Reality. Life can be hard. Life can be hard. But you know what? Nobody can roll up my sleeves but me. So sometimes I just need to listen to Dory and say, keep swimming. Just keep swimming.